From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, this is Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors, and welcome to this week's edition of Naps Chat. We are going to be doing something completely different today. Earlier this week, Naps Chat was granted permission by the House Oversight and Reform Committee to record a press conference that was conducted on Thursday by the chairwoman of the committee, Carolyn Maloney, along with subcommittee chair Jerry Connolly of Virginia, and Representative Peter King of New York. At that press conference, the members of Congress announced the creation of a Postal Preservation Caucus. It's a bipartisan caucus that is being led by Chairman Carolyn Maloney and Chairman Jerry Connolly, with Mark Amadei, Republican member of Nevada, and Peter King, Republican member from New York. During this press conference, the members of Congress discuss how to deal with the White House and their opposition to postal relief legislation, as well as strategies dealing with the United States Senate, which thus far has been somewhat recalcitrant in addressing the postal issue. Please listen in.
Today, with my good friends and colleagues, Representative Peter King from New York and Jerry Connolly from Virginia, we will be sending a bipartisan letter to congressional leadership asking for urgent financial assistance to save the Postal Service. In addition, we are releasing a video on the need for the post office. Representative Mark Amadei is also joining the letter, but he unfortunately is in Nevada and has other commitments and will not be able to join us. We are also announcing the formation of the Postal Preservation Caucus, a bipartisan caucus with the aim of helping the Postal Service through these challenging times. We are in the midst of a national emergency caused by the coronavirus, and it is having a dire effect on the Postal Service. If it does not receive immediate financial assistance from the federal government, it could be forced to cease operations by the end of this fiscal year, September 30th. Mail volume is dropping and has caused the Postal Service revenues to fall. The Postal Service is part of our nation's critical infrastructure. It is one of the few government services that are mentioned in our Constitution, and it helps bind us all together, rich, poor, rural, urban, no matter your race, religion, or political party. The Postal Service delivers to every address in our nation, no matter how remote. It does so with a dedicated and brave workforce. They are essential employees facing the danger of the current pandemic every single day. Many are sick from the virus. Congress just passed trillions of dollars in assistance for all kinds of industries and companies that are critical to our economy. But we did that in a very strong bipartisan basis, but there was not even a dime of funding for the Postal Service. We must act now to save the Postal Service, and I am so thankful that this is also a bipartisan effort on behalf of the American people. Just look at how critical it is to us during this pandemic. They are delivering millions of life-saving medications, millions of stimulus checks, unemployment benefits during this crisis. The 2020 census forms are going to every household in America. They are providing critical services. We must help them through this critical time. And with that, I'd like to recognize from the great state of New York, Peter King.
Thank you very much, Carolyn. I really appreciate that. And certainly appreciate your leadership. And it's great also to be on this with Jerry Connolly, who is, again, a great warrior. And also Mark Amadei, who, again, can't be with us today, but certainly fully supports what we're doing. I just want to echo everything that Carolyn said. The fact is there has to be an immediate infusion of money into the Postal Service. The Postal Service is integral to the United States. There's nothing more American than the U.S. Postal Service. As Carolyn said, it delivers mail to everyone, anywhere in the United States. And now, especially in this time of coronavirus. It's more important than ever. Now, also, you know, whatever grievances people have or whatever changes or opposition they have to the post office, the postal service, they should not be using the coronavirus as an attempt or as a means or an excuse to starve the post office and put it out of business. This is wrong. If there are reforms that people think are needed, we can do that later on. We can adjust it. We can look at it. The fact is they need it, and we need it as Americans. The extra money has to be funded in. The losses that are emerging from the coronavirus and the postal service are immense. This is no fault of theirs. And yet, despite that, they are, as Carolyn said, carrying out the vital service of delivering checks to the people who need them the most. So with that, I strongly support legislation that would provide for an immediate infusion of $75 billion into the post office, $25 billion for the coronavirus losses, another $25 billion for infrastructure changes, and also $25 billion that they have, basically a line of credit they would have with the Treasury Department as we go forward for the unanticipated expenditures from the coronavirus. So with that, again, I'm proud to stand with Carolyn and Jerry and Mark. This is vital. And I know that the solid majority of Congress is with us. We can't allow the Postal Service to be allowed to die on the vine because of an agenda that some people might have.
I want to thank both Carolyn Maloney and Peter King for their leadership. Carolyn Maloney, our chairwoman of Oversight and Reform, minutes after she got elected as chairman, she and I sat down together on the floor, and the subject she wanted to talk about was postal reform. Her leadership and her resolve on this issue is just critical, and I can't thank her enough for what she's doing in elevating the issue and making sure our colleagues understand the grave condition of the Postal Service, largely through no fault of its own. The criticality of the Postal Service is, you know, it's got one of the largest workforces in America, 650,000 men and women who put themselves at risk every day, and many of them have, in fact, been exposed to COVID, and 40 of them tragically have died. They deliver to every household and every business in America every day. And as Carolyn said, critical things like prescription drugs, medical equipment, foodstuffs, commercial transactions, the census. And now we're asking them to do more by way of voting by mail ballot. And I would also say that unlike the government in general, which only has 17% approval rating from the American public, the Postal Service is the single most popular adjunct of the United States government or quasi-government. 74% of the American people approve and have a favorable opinion of their post service because it has universal service. It doesn't matter where you live, you will be delivered to. And we take it for granted that in the midst of this pandemic, it will be there every day on time with the same postman or postwoman. And yet, the pandemic is costing it gravely. In early March, volume had fallen by 5.7%. By late March, it had fallen 30%. By July, mail volume will have fallen by 50%. That is to say, half of what it was a year ago. And that's because largely commercial activity has ceased. So has advertising, so has communications through the mail. Packages continue to grow, but they only represent 5% of the volume. As a result, the Postal Service is losing directly because of COVID-19, $2 billion a month. They will run out of cash by September 30th. And as Carolyn indicated, that could have the potential for serious disruption of delivery and service. We cannot let that happen. We have an obligation. If we can help the airline industry, if we can look at helping, you know, the hotel and tourist industry, we have an absolute obligation to ensure for Americans that the Postal Service will be solvent and will be functioning throughout the pandemic and beyond. And we have to do two basic things. We have to help plug the hole of revenue losses due to COVID-19, and that's going to be roughly $25 billion, as Peter said. Another $25 billion for infrastructure investment there. They have the largest single vehicular fleet in America. Many of their vehicles are approaching 35 years of age. They're clunkers, they're fuel inefficient, and they require hefty maintenance. They have to be replaced. And then the third thing we've definitely got to do is debt forgiveness. Congress imposed an onerous prepayment requirement on the Postal Service unique to it that has given it an enormous debt overhang we have to address. Those three things, restore the Postal Service, guarantee that the delivery and service will be uninterrupted, and reassure the American public that a venerated service mandated by the Constitution of the United States will be there today and tomorrow.
Jacob, with the Washington Post, you are now available to ask a question.
For Chairwoman Maloney or for Congress, for Congressman Connolly, can you get at the tension here of the importance of passing a stimulus package with postal funding before the Postal Service feels the need to utilize this $10 billion loan that was provided in CARES?
I think absolutely. That's why we formed this bipartisan caucus to push together to get into the next disaster relief proposal. Our leadership says that they are for it. It's been a crisis time. We pushed hard to get it into the last three and a half packages, and we're working now on a fourth, and we hope very much to get it in. But we hope to make it a bipartisan effort. It serves everybody in America. It truly, if there was something that is bipartisan, should be preserving the Postal Service for everyone. So we're pushing hard for it, and that is why we are forming this caucus. That's why we're releasing the video today on the importance of the Postal Service to every American, and that's why we're working so hard. I yield now to my colleague and friend, Jerry Connolly.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman, and I agree with you. If I could just add to that, Jacob, candidly, I think that Steve Mnuchin, the Secretary of Treasury, is using that $10 billion line of credit as a Trojan horse. He is insisting on conditionality that would wholesale transfer management responsibilities and pricing decisions, which, by the way, by law, are made by the Postal Regulatory Commission, not by the Secretary of Treasury, if they want to have access to that line of credit. From my point of view, that's a non-starter. But more importantly, maybe, I would think all of us on this phone would agree, it's not a substitute for the infusion of capital and cash and debt forgiveness they desperately need to return to solvency and guarantee operations.
Michael, with the New York Daily News, you are now available to ask a question.
Yeah, hi, guys. Thanks for doing the call. And maybe this is more for Congressman Gink, since he's a Republican, but Congressman Maloney noted, you tried to get this in the previous packages, and the biggest resistance that I could see was coming from Republicans in the Senate. So what are you doing to convince them to do more?
Okay, thank you. I don't know if you can convince them by logic or reason. You just may have to do it by force of votes, basically insist on it in negotiations, show that the American people are behind it, and uses leverage in the negotiations. If they want something, they'll have to agree with this. I don't expect it to be easy. I don't expect to change Mitch McConnell's mind as to what he wants to do, but you can put them in a position where they have to go along with this. This, to me, is part of hard bargaining, and we have to fight to get it done. People can have agendas where they're opposed to the post office, they want to dramatically change the post office. That's all for another day. You can't be doing that during the midst of a pandemic, using this as an excuse, basically destroy the post office or weaken it so much that it's changed beyond recognition. So right now they're in this crisis because of the pandemic, and again, it's no fault of theirs. And the bottom line is the American people do support this. This isn't something abstract we're asking for. This is not a special favor or a special interest. This is something the American people want. So I think it's just we have to make the case, and we have to use whatever pressure we have to get it done.
Could I add to that, Peter?
Sure.
This is Jerry Connolly. Carolyn Maloney and I drafted a package that gave debt forgiveness of $11 billion and cash infusion of $14 billion in the CARES Act. That survived the House version of the bill. When it got to the Senate, they watered that down, but they did not eliminate it. They were receptive. The Republicans in the Senate were receptive to some relief, cash relief for the Postal Service. It was the White House communicated through Steve Mnuchin, the Secretary of the Treasury, that explicitly stripped out those provisions. Not the Republican Senate, the White House and Steve Mnuchin.
Okay. Jacob, it appears you have a follow-up question. You are now unmuted.
Hi again, everyone. I guess I'll just follow up on the point you made, Congressman Connolly, and please, anyone, you know, available, Congressman King or Chairwoman Maloney, please feel free to weigh in. Through your assertion and through our reporting, it's clear that the Treasury Department, with instructions from the White House, was the one that nixed this direct appropriation, and Senate Republicans went along with it. What would be different this time around, given the support for the Postal Service or just a shift in priorities, that you feel would let enough of your Senate GOP colleagues out of the box and give them the cover to vote for an appropriation against the wishes of the White House?
So what's different between now and then? At that time, there was no public surge of concern or interest in the post office. Carolyn Maloney and I and our colleagues in Oversight and Reform, understood that this was happening, but it hadn't really gotten into the public mind, right? Since then, there have been viral tweets to the tune of millions of views and hits, movie stars in Hollywood retweeting the plight of the Postal Service, stories on cable news networks, in newspapers such as your own, the New York Times, other outlets all over the country. Carolyn and I have led an effort at every Democratic caucus conference call. When people talk about what has to be in the next bill, we bring up, one of us at least brings up, a postal. And it's gotten in people's heads. The president was finally actually asked a question about it and got defensive about it at one of his press conferences. Joe Biden talked about it, like, what is that about? How could we let the Postal Service, you know, fail? And all of a sudden now it's in the public mind. I can tell you, in the last 3 weeks in my office, given everything we're dealing with, and we're getting thousands of communications every week, the number one issue for the last 3 weeks, believe it or not, has been postal. People, when they learn, like Peter King said, that postal could be at risk, they are very agitated and outraged about that. That has to be fixed. And I agree with Peter. I think that the public surge of interest and outrage is going to influence our colleagues. And final point, if I'm a Republican member of Congress from a rural part of America, I understand that the Postal Service, if there's any cutback on the Postal Service, it will affect my region first. We're the more remote, we're the more expensive, and we're at risk. So I think this ought to be a bipartisan effort. I think it will be. There's a lot of support on the Republican side of the aisle for the Postal Service. And as Peter said, as they start to hear from the constituents, I think they're going to have a different point of view about the criticality of this inclusion in the next bill.
I'd like to add to that we are releasing a letter to all the congressional leaders from companies, state associations, consumer advocacy organizations, all of whom say it is imperative to save the Postal Service. It is well over 27 pages long, broken down by states. These are people that are out there. There are a number of petition drives. I've started two in my office, and I think we should start one out of the committee, going across America, showing support. And I think as people realize that it really is in danger of closing, that you'll see more and more support. But only bipartisan change is lasting. And it has always struck me as unusual that many of the districts that benefit the most from the Postal Service are rural areas that are represented by Republicans. If they were to privatize the post office, then if it's a private entity, they're going to go where the money is, where it's high density, and they can make a lot of money. The post office pledges to go. If you're the only person in a county, you're going to get your mail. And even if there are only 30 people in the county, you're going to get your mail. That wouldn't be there in a privatized system. So I see that it's critical. It could happen. Everybody thinks, oh, it'll never happen. Well, we're not getting the money that they need to confront the coronavirus-related losses, nor to modernize, nor to give them the borrowing authority that they need. And I'm hopeful that with this caucus, we will be able to reach out. We had another critical bill Peter and I worked on, the 9/11 health and compensation bill. This was right after 9/11 to take care of the heroes and heroines that risk their lives to save others. I would say that the Postal Service is risking its life as an essential service, going anywhere and everywhere and treating anyone who walks into their facility. And many of them have COVID, and that's why so many postal workers as essential employees have become ill. But I think as we reach out, that we will get more Republican and Democratic members. Peter and I worked that bill very hard. By the end, we had almost 400 members of Congress on both sides of the aisle supporting it. So I think the Postal Service is equally as important in providing services to people. If you just look at how much we rely on it every day. Right now, I'm in a lockdown neighborhood, as is Peter. We can't even go outside except for an essential reason. And the only way we are communicating with each other besides the phone, the way we are getting our medicines and our supplies and our necessary things for life to continue is through the Postal Service. It's an absolutely critical service during this crisis, and we should recognize the sacrifice that they have given. And on top of everything that they're confronting in battling the coronavirus is the fact that they don't know whether they're going to have their budget. It's a really dire situation. And as I said, it is a emergency critical service, essential service. I'm getting complaints every now and then from people because of the lines at the postal office. I have to explain to them. Many, they don't have the personnel, they've had to cut back, and many are sick. But we need to give them the support that they so justly deserve. And with the help of Jerry Conley, who's been on this issue for a long time, I think we can get every Democrat, and I hope we can get a majority of Republicans. Because if they care about their constituents, they have to care about a vital postal service to bring the supplies to them that they need.
You know, Chairwoman Maloney, I think it's worth noting to your point and to Peter's point about bipartisanship that the Postal Board of Governors, which had, I believe, five members, three Republicans, two Democrats, 2 weeks ago voted unanimously to recommend the four steps we're talking about, the infusion of cash, the debt forgiveness, the need for a capital fund, and a line of credit. That was a unanimous vote. So there is, I think, the real makings of a very powerful bipartisan coalition here to respond to the crisis you've described, Chairwoman Maloney.
Also, if I could just say, I think the mood is different right now. We go back to March 13th, March 27th, when the first legislation was passed. Fact is, at that time, there was not panic, but certainly, you know, there was no unemployment insurance, there was no small business loans, there was no infrastructure in place to, you know, for payroll protection, any of that. And that was done, and they were the immediate priorities. And so I think that made it harder for the Senate to resist the administration. But now that, even though obviously nothing is working perfectly, but we have an infrastructure for unemployment compensation, for the payroll protection plan, for small business, that's in place. So now we have to have the time to think about it and say, hey, the post office is going to go under if we don't do this. So I think it's a different atmosphere. And that to me would make it easier and more likely that the Senate can push back against the administration.
NAPS thanks the leadership of the Chairman of the House Oversight and Reform Committee, Karen Maloney, along with the Subcommittee Chair of the House Government Operations Subcommittee, Jerry Conley, Representative Peter King, and Representative Mark Amadei for their leadership in helping to preserve and protect the United States Postal Service. Please take their advice to heart. Go and advocate for the United States Postal Service to your member of Congress and to your United States Senator. So, until next week.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make